Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
I really like working when things are against the wall. Like, I think my best work comes out, like Adrian was saying, under pressure. Like, in those cases, it's like sink or swim, so you have to swim, you know? You can't think. And so, like, I like high pressure stuff like that. It's, all these projects are like a real like risk return play. You know, you could put in all this effort and then not get a planned return, but that's part of the risk. And, you know, like, to me, that's very exciting. Art is about risk taking. And I think what Adrian did was a huge risk, a painting every day for a year, and it totally worked.
It's a real treat to invite two podcast and Crit Group mentor alums back to our platform to ask them about the work they've been making and some special projects they recently completed. Welcome back, Coulter Fussell and Adrian Brown David. Coulter Fussell was born and raised in Columbus, Georgia, an old textile town. She's the youngest family quilter, hailing from multi-generations of seamstresses and quilters. She produces boundary-pushing quilt works using discarded and donated textiles as her sole materials. Taught to quilt by her mother, Kathy, Coulter has exhibited works across the country from the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art to the Halsey Institute of Contemporary Art in Charleston, South Carolina. She currently lives in a rural North Mississippi town with her family. Hear more about Coulter on episode 16 of the Artist Mother Podcast. And Coulter's neighbor and friend, Adrian Brown David, had a childhood immersed in a world of art and creativity. From sketching on the sidewalk with chalk and broken pieces of brick to visiting galleries and museums with her mother. After a year at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago and some time teaching art in St. Louis, Adrian moved to St. Croix, where the beauty of the land and culture impacted her art in a huge way. Today, she is settled in Mississippi with her husband and four daughters who influence her artistic style and subject matter as they grow. You can hear more about Adrian's life and work on the Artist Mother Podcast episode number 3. All right, let's dive in and hear about the amazing work that both of you did in 2021. So I would love to start just by having you share the inspiration for your project and just kind of like where the idea came from, and obviously explaining like what the project, the big project is that you did in 2021. I'm releasing this episode at the beginning of the year, so I just hope it gives people lots of inspiration for some of the work that they can do throughout the course of a year. And yeah, I just like take me back to kind of that. Maybe this will be the thing that I do in 2021 as like my big studio-based project. Coulter, why don't you start?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, the motivator was I needed to make money because the restaurants were closed. That life was about to be gone. It was unsteady. And so I was like, I got to figure out a way to like bring in what would sort of equal an income that I would have been making at the restaurant, or at least something sort of along that, you know, realm if I was working full time there or whatever. And, you know, the ideal is that you sell your artwork, you know, or you have shows or whatever, but like the galleries are closed, And I mean, not that they were knocking down my door anyway, but, you know, so I actually really thought about this for a while. And me and my husband, Will, like really discussed like price points and like how long it would actually take me to make. Well, first of all, the project is I made a quilt a month for the entire year of 2021, the hand quilted quilt, and which is like, you know, pretty labor intensive or whatever. And each one was different from the next. And so we did a lot of talking about, you know, what people could afford versus like whether I was going to get, you know, it was going to be a good risk for me, you know. And at the last minute, we changed the price on what I was going to charge. And like, thank God.
you upped it, I'm assuming?
Yeah, yeah, I upped it. And if I had done all that work for less than what I made, that would have been like, wow. Anyway, so yeah, I'll try to keep it short. But it was mainly like a way for me to be able to show my work and sell my work with no sort of stable income from the restaurants and no really possibility of any gallery shows in like real sort of a really unstable year. And also I work in craft. It's hard for us anyway to get gallery shows. Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, you know, when the system doesn't work for you, you make a system that works for you. And so that was sort of my mentality going into that. So.
And the quilts specifically, like there was some numerical connections with the 2021.
Yeah, right? I'm super into like stupid stuff like that, like real like number, like, you know, like quilts are like really mathematical and like I don't actually do real math in my quilts. They're really sort of like intuitively felt out, but like I do think about the number a lot, the numbers a lot. And so each quilt was 202.1 centimeters wide, and they each one cost $2,021, and that included everything, you know, like shipping and hanging mechanisms and stuff. And so, you know, that coincided with the year 2021. You know, I just started trying to make something kind of fun out of the whole thing so that it wasn't necessarily just like, here's a quilt I made, here's how much it cost, you buy, you know, I try to play with like the commerce part of the whole thing and make that a piece of the artwork. I've done that in projects before and I'll be doing it again this year as well. So.
Yeah, I love that. And I'm pretty sure in the previous episode that you were on, you talked about making quilts that you sold for the exact cost of your studio rent.
Yeah, rent quilts.
So just, I don't know. I'm so inspired by this idea of like, you have a specific need, and so you make something to specifically fill that need.
Yeah, that's craft. And like, I love being really open about the economics of stuff, because it's been so impactful for me to not have money, and then have money, and then not have money, and how to figure out how to have money and keep money for my kids. And it's stuff that like I don't think artists talk about very much, especially when you're a woman artist. Like, you're not just making money for yourself, you know.
Right.
Adrian could really talk about this with four children, and so, you know, and then you have way less time to do it. And so I think talking about the money part of art and really sort of including that in the whole process openly, it's not just something I really like, it's something I want to do. Like, I want to tell people how much money I make. I want them to know how much I earned and how long I worked on it. And you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
I want other like women or even artists, any kind of artists, I don't know, to like read that and see that, you know. So.
Me too. Transparency around finances is something we desperately need in the art world. Adrian, let's hear about your project. What was kind of the impetus for, like, where did you get the idea and how did you like think about it and where did you begin? Was it day one, 2021? Like, you both had your idea sort of at the end of 2020 with the intention of starting your project January 1st, 2021.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, I was in the exact same boat as Coulter. Like, I mean, I was already at home anyway, but my husband also works in restaurants, and so his industry shut down, and we were like, well, you know, we've got to make money somehow. And so I really, like, it was really just on the fly that I came up with the idea. I was in Memphis for the day with my teenagers, and I do my best thinking when I have to drive long distances. I was like, what do you guys think of this idea? Like, what if I did a tiny painting every single day in 2021 and posted it for sale on Instagram? Like, do you think y'all think that would be a good idea? And my oldest was like, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. Like, you know, that's money every day. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that would be great. And so I was like, all right, if my teenagers think I can do it, then I guess I can probably do it. And so like I put my fingers out to see if that would be something we're interested in. And the response was really good. And so I was like, well, I'll try it. And, you know, if I get 30 days in and I'm like, I hate this, I'd never want to do it again, then I'll stop. But that mm-hmm. didn't happen. And so I just kept it going. And I started day one of 2021, January 1st. I woke up at 7 a.m. and I went in my studio and I painted for 2 hours and I posted it for sale. And that first painting sold in maybe 15 minutes to a friend of mine. And I was like, oh, yay, my painting sold. And so the next day I got up at 7 a.m. and I painted for 2 hours and I posted it on Instagram and it sold in 30 seconds. And I was like, holy crap. And then day three, it was like,
and that was probably the longest.
That was the longest. Like day three, it was like, damn, broke. And I just, it was like, oh, I really have to be on it now. And it was nonstop for the other 363 days of the year.
That hill was like that big, but the downhill.
Yeah.
Just amazing, the response that you received from that project. Yeah,
wild. It was not, that is not at all what I expected. Like,
yeah,
I, you know, that most of them would sell eventually, like the, you know, first 5 seconds every morning, like having to go through and figure out who commented first was not what I was expecting the response to be. So,
yeah. And, you know, the thing is, if they didn't all sell, like, you would have had a ton of work to do something with, you know, like just saying that to share encouragement that although your needs were rooted in like the specific financial need, like, you know, you still would have had something amazing, whether the work sold or not, right? Because you're making artwork. So
I painted 365 unique paintings.
Right.
Course of a year, and I painted way more than that because I still had other work and commissions and gallery show and blah blah blah.
Yeah,
but like a minimum of 365 pieces over the year.
So amazing. Artist mothers know there's nothing more important than taking care of yourself, because if you're not feeling your best, you can't be your best. Zambucol helps you feel your best with powerful immune support, powered by nature's superfruit, black elderberry. I'm personally so grateful for Zambucol and their immune system supporting products. I think about my health a lot and feel like the best action I can take besides getting good sleep is nourishing my body by consuming healthy things that support my immune system. Zambucol elderberry gummies taste great, and I love that they are low in sugar and contain no gelatin since my family is vegetarian. It's so easy to get my kiddos to eat one of these gummies every day, and it helps me feel good knowing my kids have the support from products like this, especially in a season of life where reinforcing our bodies with healthy things is just on our minds a lot. Zambucol is a trusted brand. It's the original black elderberry and was developed by a virologist, so I know I'm getting a great quality product. Get 15% off your next order of $9.99 or more at ZambucolUSA.com. Use code ARTIST15 for 15% off. Just as a note, these statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Thank you, Zambucol, for supporting the Artist Mother podcast. We so appreciate you and the products you're putting into the world. Again, Artist Mothers get 15% off your next order of $9.99 or more at ZambucolUSA.com and use code ARTIST15 for 15% off. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about how these projects sort of fit in with like other work that you were doing in the studio, kind of what you just brought up, Adrian. I'm just wondering if this project, like as you were kind of planning for it, were you like, okay, this is all I'm going to be able to do or have time for? Or was it like, I've got to fit this in within the context of like the normal way I work in the studio and the other things that I have on my plate? Just wanting to know like how it kind of fit in with everything else that you had going on. And just curious about the mode of working that you chose. Like if that's like something that, like if both of you kind of always work in this, let me set up this structure and like I'll fill in all the boxes for that structure. And once that structure is complete, I'll move on to the next one. Adrian, can you start?
Well, I will say that 2021 was probably not the most intelligent decision that I've ever made about work. I didn't slow down anything else. And so I just added this ridiculous project to my already full plate. So I would definitely say that's probably wasn't the best plan. I didn't really think that went through as well as I probably could have. But I mean, I thrive under pressure. Mm. And so for me, it was just like, okay, this is one more thing that doing today. And so I just have to fit my life around this one more thing that I'm doing today. I mean, I had some days where I was like 14, 16 hours in the studio, days and days and days in a row, like just knocking out work and doing commissions and getting ready for the show and painting a painting every morning and still having to like homeschool a kid and like pets are getting sick and pop breaking down and like, and so like, it just was another thing that I added to my life. And it was stressful in a lot of moments, but I also sort of live for that. Mm-hmm. It kind of keeps me going. Like once I slow, it's really hard to like start back up. Mm-hmm. And so kind of having something that I needed to do kept me going and all these other projects that I needed to do. And on top of that, just the practice of painting every single day, like created a system for knocking out portraits. I was like, yeah. I can knock out a portrait in no time at this point. Like I have got my routine down. I know exactly things down and to get the result that I want. And I think a lot of that just came from the daily practice of having to do it every day and having to do it within a time frame. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't want to be painting all day. I was like, I'll give myself 2 hours and whatever I can knock out in 2 hours, like that's what I'm doing. And so like, I got really good at like figuring out what needed to happen, how it needed to go to get the result that I wanted. And so that was really helpful. But yeah, I definitely did not move anything or shove this in with everything else.
Awesome. Coulter, can you answer that question? Just interested to know how the project sort of fit in with the rest of everything else you had going on and just how you, like, if this mode of working is a way that you normally, you know, function in your studio practice, like taking on these big projects.
Yeah, well, I'm really project based, like series based. If I make one quilt about something, I'm usually making eight quilts about something anyhow. So, you know, a big year long thing was sort of a natural thing I would kind of be doing anyway. You know, I'd be making 12 quilts about a certain thing. And this time 12 quilts was about like the passage of time, you know, or the natural world or sort of whatever they wound up being about each month. But, you know, like Adrian, I wound up over, you know, the course of a couple of months, like really finding my rhythm, became really efficient. And just sort of the way it broke down in the studio, you know, over the course of a month is I wouldn't start a month quilt until the first day of that month. Well, I'll tell you why in a second. And so the first day of that month, I would walk into the studio just with no idea, you know, and at all. And so I would sort of look around at fabric and like probably think a little bit about like the color shifts in the seasons and like maybe something that was going on with me or the world or, you know, like that was really thinking about color mainly. And so I would spend the first 7 days composing the quilt in the studio. And on the seventh day, around then, I would have it basted, take it in the hoop, and take it home. And so that cleared up my daytime to mm-hmm. then work on my sort of weird, wacky, other wild stuff. Because these were traditional quilts I was making. I mean, right. traditional. And so by the usually like eighth, ninth, or tenth of the month, my studio was clear of the month quilt. The quilt was at home, so I would work on that when I got home from work at like, you know, 5 till whenever. So that would usually be finished up at home on around the 17th or 18th. And then I would allow 2 or 3 days to photograph, which wound up being so much fun. Photographing those quilts was like one of the best parts of the month for me. I like couldn't wait to go like photograph. We'd like think of all the spots we could take it. And I learned a lot about, you know, taking a good picture of my work by doing that. And then I would post it on the 21st. And so then it was over. So 21 days, it was over. So I had from the 22nd to the 30th or the 31st to not think about a month quilt at all, like in any way whatsoever.
And you know? You stuck to that? Like, cause I feel like I would have gotten like, I got to work ahead so that like if shit comes up, like you were really like the first of the month you'd.
Yeah. There might be like, you know, if it was like the 30th or 31st, I might be starting to think like, you know what? I think I might do a bear claw, you mm-hmm. know, be like as close as I would get. And part of that is because like, I really like working when things are against the wall. Like I think my best work comes out, like Adrian was saying, under pressure, like, in those cases, it's like sink or swim. So mm-hmm. you have to swim, yep. you know, you can't sink. And so like, I like high pressure stuff like that. This, all these projects are like a real like risk return play, you mm. know, like, you know, you could put in all this effort and then not get a planned return, but that's part of the risk. And, you know, like to me, that's very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, art is about risk taken. And I think like, what Adrian did was a huge risk, a painting every day for a year, and it totally worked.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, even if she didn't sell all the paintings for the year, it would have also worked. Mm-hmm. You know, like when I do a project where like I sell a bunch of pieces or try to sell a bunch of pieces to people, I make it so that, you know, they're sort of like gambling raffle projects.
Mm-hmm.
The person who's bought the work, they win no matter what. Like. Right. If their piece acts as a ticket for a larger work, they're always going to win because they got that piece of art, mm-hmm. you know. So I make it so that I'm actually taking on the bigger risk than the potential buyer is.
Right.
And I really like that. It's exciting, you know.
Okay, so now that you kind of have laid out your timeline and that big, you know, emphasis on risk and being up against the wall, like. Did either of you have moments throughout the course of the project where you were like, something's come up, I don't know if I can do this. Like, was there kind of a make or break moment where you had to make some exceptions or, you know, things just kind of didn't go the way you wanted to and either you were up all night getting it to the 21st or you were just like, sorry guys, I'm moving it to the 22nd. Like what kind of, I don't know, like what were the really hard moments that you kind of had to push through in the project? Adrian, you want to start?
I mean, mine, because I work daily, like there were multiple days that I was like, I can't get up at 7 and work. Like, I don't feel good. I was up on, like, this was such a like visual calendar of my year. Like I can remember which paintings, you know, we're on the day that my kid had a terrible car accident, and like which painting go to the emergency room and which paintings like the dog was thrown. Like I remember those days. And so like the first part of the year, I was really like, I have to, you know, do this thing at 10 a.m. I have to post at 10 a.m. That's what people are expecting. And after a while I was like, I have a whole life
mm-hmm.
outside of here. And so like, some days I just need to do other things. Like some days I have to run errands in the morning. Some days people are sick. Some days I'm just exhausted. And so like, you'll get a painting at some point. hungover. I think the latest one I ever posted was like at 11:15 one night because I just needed my day to myself. I was like, I need to, you know, go hang out with my family. I think I got a tattoo that day. That was the day I got my latest tattoo. I was like, I'm going to the tattoo parlor. I'm going to get a tattoo. I will paint when I come home. We read the tattoo for like 5 hours. So I was like, well, I will try and get it done before midnight, but that's all I can promise. Mm-hmm. And so I never missed a day, but like my life sometimes just had to be more important than 2 hours that I spent painting. And so I was like, I just have to put this 2 hours somewhere else.
Yeah. But I love that you still never missed a day. Like you were still, you were still so committed. Like, cause I kind of assumed maybe you painted, like maybe you sat down on a Saturday and painted 5 paintings and then.
I did do that if I was traveling.
Okay.
So if like, and it depended on the travel. Like I went to, you know, a couple of residencies last year and I definitely just painted it every day while I was doing the residencies. But if I was like on legit vacation, I was like, I'm not lugging oil paints and canvases on vacation. And so I would paint a surplus. Like,
I love so that. It's so smart.
The 10 days before I went on vacation, I painted twice as much. So I do 2 tiny paintings, sometimes 3 every day on top of all the, so I just crammed more stuff in so that I didn't have to think about it while I was on vacation. So like we went to New York and we went to DC and I was like, I'm not painting on either of these trips. I'm just going to stress myself out for 10 days. And paint all that I need to paint so that I could just post on those days and then not have to think about it. And so that's really the only time I did that is if we were going on vacation.
But I love that.
Just like a daily interruption. Like I just shifted my work time around to some other time of the day.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Coulter? Any like make or break moments or just kind of anything you want to share about like the hardest parts of the project?
Well, like mine was a little more flexible just because I had 21 days to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I had some stuff like my studio flooding, but there was like, Adrian was the first one there that day. She showed up immediately. I was like stunned and crying. She saw me at my worst. But anyway, there was no way I was going to not have that quilt ready on the 21st because like, you know, there's all sorts of factors that can mess up a project like this. It could be that no one or mess up that could make a project like this not perfect, quote unquote. It could be that no one buys the work or that, you know, something, some natural disaster happens and your timing is messed up. But just not getting the work done on the day, like it was not going to be me that didn't. Right. And so, like, I think I probably would have died before I messed up 21-day deadline. I was like, this is going to work on my watch, damn it. And so, yeah, it was. And also at the end of the day, like, you know, it was my idea. I wanted to do it, you know. So nobody was forcing me but me. And so I clearly wanted to do it. So I found a lot of like joy in it, you know.
I love that commitment just to doing it for yourself.
Yeah.
You know, and you made a promise to yourself that you were going to figure out a way to do this and you didn't want to let yourself down. And I think that's amazing. I'm curious for both of you just to talk a little bit about the sort of social accountability with the project being rooted on Instagram. You know, like I don't want to go into a whole love, hate relationship conversation about Instagram, but I am just curious about how like you thought about the project in relationship to Instagram. Like, was there like, were you worried? Like maybe people won't like receive it in a way. Is this the smart place to be looking for collectors of my work and connecting with collectors? Or, you know, like Adrian, I know you had so much growth on your profile, particularly from this project. So just kind of want to hear how you, I don't know, like how you've thought about Instagram as being one of the sort of the players within this project for both of you. Coulter, you want to start back in?
Yeah, well, I do think about like, well, first of all, I'm very, very grateful. And I think anybody who lives like in a rural community is grateful for the internet. Yep. Because we don't get to go to galleries. We don't get to do any of the stuff that we see our friends in big cities do. And so I'm very, very grateful for Instagram or whatever platform it will be in the future. I don't care if it's Instagram, but, you know, just access to the outside world. Mm-hmm. But I am like, you know, I'm really aware of the fact that, like, I'm selling work, or I do sometimes sell work over Instagram, and how a gallery might look at that as like some sort of like lowbrow deal, or like it kills exclusivity, like, which they're super into. And it like really fucks with my price point from like my super big weirder work. But there's a point in which I just don't care.
Mm-hmm.
There is not another option. And I'm also having fun with this option, and I'm doing a lot of like cool work that I wouldn't otherwise do. And I'm also reaching an audience that I wouldn't necessarily always see coming down to Mississippi and walking into a gallery, or walking into a gallery in a big city.
Right.
Because they have obligations, they can't leave, you know, whatever. Like,
mm-hmm.
So, you know, I really have like enjoyed like being able to exist in both planes. And I have to work at it though. I had to present myself on Instagram as like, you know, I got to make the whole process of that be part of the piece.
Yep.
You know, which is good. It's not like a have to situation. It's a, that's challenging and I want to do it situation. Mm-hmm.
You so, mean yeah. Kind of like developing the language of talking about the project and like how you share and like the yeah. voice that you're sort of speaking about your work in.
Yeah. And some of my projects are like really conceptual and weird. And so it takes me a few posts to actually explain what it is I'm doing.
Yeah.
So like, cause I don't want somebody to have to sit there and read a freaking novel. And so I'll have to like post a little bit. And then a few days later, like be like, and see what I'm talking about here. And then mm-hmm. by the third time, they're like, oh, okay, I get it. This girl does weird quilt stuff. And yep. this is like crazy conceptual project. So.
Adrian, what about you? Just kind of how did you think about Instagram sort of being, you know, the big player and what kind of happened with that?
Well, I feel like even before this project, a lot of people who knew my work knew it from Instagram mm-hmm. for memories and culture saying I live in a tiny town. There's like 3,000 people in this town and there's, you know, one major gallery. Mm-hmm. you know, a 30-mile radius. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for me to have my work seen by anybody outside of Mississippi, like I was just going to have to take some other avenues. Mm-hmm. And so the Instagram was for me. And, you know, Instagram, like I all the time, I'm like, I am the person that I am on Instagram and mm-hmm. at home. So you may get art, you also may get lunch, you may get my kid, you may like, you may get some of everything. And so like,
cats.
Salon was probably the most consistent thing, like my most consistent year of Instagram where you really mostly just got art.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't because other things were happening. It's just like, I'm really only going to take like 3 pictures a day. And so if I already got to take 2 of those and it'd be art, then you're going to get art.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, I didn't feel like I had to make a big jump to Instagram being a platform that I use, cause I already used it to begin right. with. This just, I think it reached more people somehow mm-hmm. and I'm not Instagram savvy. Like I don't understand the algorithms. I don't often know what works. I just do the same thing all the time and hope for the best. Mm-hmm. And somehow, like it reached people this time and people shared stuff and people talked about stuff. And so like things grew really organically, but I really still to this day don't know how or why.
Well, I think people love a project. They love to see momentum. They love to feel like they're a part, or they're like, you know, it's like why we watch TV series instead of just watching yeah. like an 8-hour movie of something. It's like the thrill of the journey, right?
I think people enjoyed like having the opportunity, like it felt like they were winning something, even though they had to buy it. It felt like you yeah. won. Like,
yeah.
Today. And I never wanted to refer to it as people winning anything. Cause I was like, you're legitimately sending me money for this. Like, I don't know.
I'm the winner here.
I don't think that's how winning works. But
right.
So yeah, like it was it was what it was. Like, Instagram's going to be a part, or maybe not even Instagram, the internet is going to be a part of how I share my work, probably forever, until I'm no longer in a tiny little town in the South where nobody's like, nobody.
This podcast episode is supported by Wearing All the Hats Without Losing Your Head, which is a professional practice course specifically designed for artist mothers that I co-teach with my good friend Isadora Stowe. This course was designed for you and is open to all female and non-binary identifying artists. It lays out specific strategies for doing all the extras. You know, like everything that comes with being an artist besides making your work, from coming up with a website to writing grants to connecting with clients to pricing your work to putting your work on Instagram, photographing your work, writing your CV, writing a newsletter, goal setting. I mean, there's so much, right? There's just so much we're responsible for when we're trying to build out our careers as artists. And finding the time and headspace for these things can be so hard when you're a person who already just has a lot on your plate. So this course helps you identify your own values as an artist and carve out really your unique path and find success for the things that you want to do to make your art career successful for you. It features worksheets, accountability groups, activities, lots of conversation, and is just jam-packed full of so much material that is really broad and porous and engaging. We are really proud of this course, and we have worked so hard on it. So if you're interested in joining us, we're currently enrolling our third round of the course. It meets Monday evenings from 8 to 9:30 p.m. Eastern on Zoom starting on January 24th for 12 weeks. We would love to have you. Please check out artistmotherpodcast.com and click the community tab to see the link to the professional practice course, or there's a direct link to the course in our Instagram bio and our link tree on our Instagram, so you can find more information there. Enrollment will close January 20th, so just a few days before the course, and we would just love to have you join us. We can't wait to get to know you. We can't wait to build community and be in community with you. And we really just want to use this course to help you and all of us to just feel more focused on our own values as an artist and make decisions about the things that we want to do to improve our careers, to make them what we want them to be. And we really want you to feel empowered. This course is a lot about empowerment and just giving you the tools to be a successful artist. And success is really defined by you in that. So please join us. Enrollment closes January 20th, 2022. As I mentioned, we would love to see you there. For more information, go to artistmotherpodcast.com or check out the direct link in our link tree on Artist Mother Podcast on Instagram. Let me hear about some repercussions of the project. What are maybe some big things that you learned that you just couldn't have foreseen, like that you were going to learn this, or maybe some opportunities that happened because of the project? Just curious to know, like, what are kind of some of the ripple effects that have happened? Adrian, you want to start back in for us?
Well, I think because people shared so much and things, you know, my work got out there so much farther, I had a couple of opportunities that I don't think I would have had otherwise. Like, I showed in New York for the first time. I had a piece go to Uganda to the U.S. ambassador's house because of some article that somebody wrote, because of stuff that they saw. And so, I definitely got my work farther out than I think I would have otherwise. Mm-hmm. like, and that's been really great. I think any sort of negative repercussions or like people assuming that you can buy my paintings for $100, you can't. That's, like, my work is not $100. I don't typically paint tiny paintings. Mm-hmm. So like I've had to, you know, clarify that with people over
right,
the year. Like, I don't, you can't commission me to do a 5x7 painting for $100. Like, that's not a thing that I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, like, it's just been the far reaching, like, shows popping up and people being interested in the work and people buying the work from other places. So now, like, I have work overseas now, which I'd never had before. And so, like, people know who I am in places that they wouldn't have before.
Amazing.
Really great.
Adrian, I have to, we might have told you this, but for the listeners, Adrian had a big show last year at my husband's gallery in Oxford. And when Adrian was saying that people wanted, you know, they wanted to buy like a big painting of hers for $100, that they would also come into the gallery where she had these big, massive paintings that were like these very elaborate portraits. And they would be like, can you believe she painted this in a day? We were like, that took a lot longer than a day.
It's funny how people, you know, they just get this idea in their head and that's the box that you're in forever, right? You pick the thing and that's what you associate. That's so funny though. Oh, awesome. Coulter, what about you? Just some positive repercussions or like surprising lessons you learned about doing the project?
Well, some surprising lessons I learned about just like the methods I use in the studio is like, in the first part of the year, I was doing sort of my normal piecing, which is all hand piecing, real sort of like, loose, I don't know how to describe it, but it's, you know, real sort of like flowy or loose or, mm-hmm. or whatever. By the end of the year, I was like veering way over into like more graph, like geometric.
Mm-hmm.
And, which is something I don't normally do because I've always been like, well, I'm not precise. Why would I even try? You know,
mm-hmm.
by the end of it, like, I was like, okay, I'm not precise, but I'm like actually doing okay with this geometric work because I'm still able to, over the course of the year, hang on to the things of my work that's painterly or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I was much more by the end, you know, my very last piece was like an op art. And so I was like much more brave at trying to go into geometric work by the end of the year and like sort of strictly geometric. Mm-hmm. And as opposed to like implied geometry and, you know, loose lines or whatever. And so I'm coming into this year and really sort of about to do like a good bit of like machine sewing as opposed to hand piecing
mm-hmm. on
geometric designs to use in like other work or whatever.
So were the quilts that you made towards the end of the year, did you start to do some machine pieced?
Yeah. Okay. So by the end of the year, I guess, starting in about, well, the May, there was a quilt in May that was all florals, and that had to be sort of half machine pieced and half, the other half was hand pieced just to make the effect work. But mm-hmm. Starting in like, you know, September, October, November, December, I started to like really get into the geometry of the stuff. And mm-hmm. so like I was doing like actual math with like numbers and adding and subtracting
mm-hmm.
instead of like sort of feeling it out. And I wasn't doing it well, but I was trying. And the machine really sort of brought, you know, strengths out in that. I mean, like any machine piecer would tell you like, yeah, duh, obviously. But, you know, I sort of gained some confidence there.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
They were really beautiful too, Coulter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just, you know, like Adrian, I think part of the fun of being a viewer of the project is just like the surprise and the thrill of like what's the next one gonna look like, you know, like just yeah, and just always being, I don't know, kind of wowed by the piece. How did you guys celebrate?
Oh, God.
I mean, like, this is a huge, both of you, these projects are not small. And you you know, the projects literally, they did what they were supposed to do, right? Like, that's like a huge accomplishment, not only in that every single piece sold, you got the financial repercussion that you were hoping for, but like you had other things that came about that I'm sure were, you know, just lessons that you learned about yourself as an artist. Like you were mentioning, Adrian, just potential clients like opened up to you that are farther reaching. Just, I mean, this is like a big deal. I just feel like women need to be better about celebrating their accomplishments. And I'm just wondering if either of you have taken time to do that, or if there was something specific maybe that you did that was an act of celebration for completion of the project.
I did not celebrate. I'm not celebratory. Like, I'm not really a person who like celebrates things. So the last painting was December 31st. I did it on Instagram Live. So like, I talked, my husband and I talked to people for 3 hours while I painted. A friend brought me tacos, so I didn't have to cook. Tara cooked me a steak for dinner, which I'd never had before. I'd never just like had a steak because whatever reason. So he cooked me a steak, and that was really it. And then I haven't done any work since December 31st. So I guess like my working for 2 weeks is my celebration. I've literally not done.
You bought a couch.
I bought a couch, but I did that before.
Oh,
I did that, and so it just took a month to get here.
House every day, and it was January 1st, and we walked by our house, and I was like, I wonder what Adrian's doing today. Well, it's like, not painting. It was so funny. Like, Adrian, on January 1st, you were the first person I thought of.
She's like, whoo, finally.
I can see Coulter and Will like walking their little dog from my studio as they walk past. Although, because I'm not usually awake at that time anymore.
You slept. That's what you did to celebrate.
So, like, I really just have taken a break. And so, like, I'm now at the point where I'm like, I actually really have a lot of work that I need to be doing that I've been ignoring because I still have commissions and stuff. But, like, I needed to just take a breather. It's hard sometimes when, like, you're everything is dependent on you bringing in money. Like, I still have to pay bills and all of that stuff. And so it's really hard sometimes to be like, but I also need a break because the thing that pays my bills is also the thing that keeps me sane. And when I turn the thing that keeps me sane into work, then like, I don't always know how to deal with the emotional ramifications of this thing that I need to survive actually stressing me out. Like, it's hard to be okay with resting. And, you know, these last couple of weeks have just been me resting. Like, I've been watching TV and playing Angry Birds and talking to my kids and eating snacks and sleeping in and things that I didn't do for a full year. And so I've been fighting off the like work guilt, get back into it. But I guess that's my self-awareness, to just not do work for anybody else right now.
Yeah, that's an act of celebration for sure. Coulter, did you do anything to celebrate?
I don't know. I don't remember. Probably. I think I celebrated every 21st of the month. You know, I know my celebrated every 21st of the month as soon as I sold one. Like, incessant text from me saying that, like, I'm never going to be able to pay my bills. Nobody's bought it. I'm going to have to waitress forever. So, like, God, one of these freaking quills. Anyway, so I think he was more glad that it was over than I was. But no, I mean, you know, I just sort of hopped back onto another project just because this next project sort of reverses the time. Like, I don't spend as much time on the actual project in the month overall over the course of the year. But so, yeah, I think I just sort of celebrated by, like, you know, going on to the next thing.
All right. Well, tell me what the next thing is.
When it gets warm, we'll have yard drinks. Coulter and
I don't see each other in the winter.
No, we don't see each other in the winter time. It's too cold.
Okay, well, tell me what's next for you. What is your 2022 project? Or if you don't have a project that you're working on, kind of what are some big things or goals that you have for this year, Coulter? I know you do have a new project, so let's hear you talk about that.
Yeah, yeah. So my new project this year is called Dream House, and I've got it so that I'm offering a doll quilt, like a small, like framed handmade quilt, once a week. And those sort of like, those, your purchase of one of those acts as like basically a ticket toward possibly winning a larger piece. And there'll be four larger sculpture, like wall sculptures throughout the year. Each sort of a conceptual room that you're in and like some sort of pursuit of a dream, you know, the internal house when you're going toward dreams or whatever. And so anyway, I'll offer, you know, one quilt every Friday at noon on Instagram. And there's, you know, there's sort of secret ways to find out if you won the larger piece that I reveal later on throughout the year. So it's another game. And and it's really fun to actually to work on that one. It's not quite as like the quilts, all the quilts I made last year were like traditional quilts, and that they as quilts. These are not at all. Everything I'm doing this year is completely wacky off the wall. Like, so every constraint I showed last year or restraint is let loose this year.
the top button is unbuttoned.
Oh yeah. And then I've got a couple of shows coming up. So,
awesome. So are you making 52 doll quilts big four quilts for this project?
49 doll quilts. I'm going to stop December 20. I'm going to stop on December 21st and not worry about the last 2 weeks, because trying to do it on like the equinox and solstice or whatever. And yeah, and four large like works, you know, that I would normally sell for like a whole lot of, well, try to sell for a whole lot of money. You could possibly get one for free, you know? So, or, amazing. You know, buy a doll quilt.
Awesome. Adrienne, what about you? What are you working on for 2022? Do you have a big project or just working on some goals or what?
Well, Coulter sounds a lot more fun than mine. Like, it sounds cooler. I'm just going to do, this year, I'm going to do some limited edition prints, which is not something I've ever done for myself. Like, prints just started being available through like a third party or something. But I'm going to do, I'm going to try and do a monthly drop of 20 prints. And I'm going to start with selected works from the show at Southside in October.
Awesome.
And they'll be signed and numbered, and they'll probably be, you know, $200, $250, something like that. And so that'll be my like monthly thing. Wait, stuff from the printer. But hopefully I'll have that underway soon. I'm still doing commissions, though my commissions are booked up until 2023 already. So I'm not taking any new commissions until next year. Let's see, I have a piece and a show in St. Louis this month, but I actually don't really have any shows on the horizon this year because I just didn't have time to look into anything last year. So, you know, I put my feelers out to some places. I have a list of, you know, people I want to contact. And other than that, I'm probably just going to paint for myself and see what happens. I got a couple of projects that, you know, I don't have hardcore details on yet, but I'll share those later. But, you know, I don't know. The prints are going to try and feed us and pay our bills for the rest of this year. And after
that. Well, and I just think it's so smart too to have, just as an artist, like, let alone you literally need the money to support your family, but like just having something in your practice that you know generates income so that you can make other work that is not as reliant on that pressure, right? Like you were talking about kind of falling into that trap of just the stress of like making something that you need it to sell so that you can pay your bills. But then it's like, but this is also the thing that I love and I just want to do it and not be stressed about money. And I don't know how artists do it who don't have something, you know, that generates income. It's just really hard to not have that thing. So like being smart about it and having a project or I just think it's so inspiring. So thank you both for sharing. I'll obviously be sharing about the project when we release this episode and be linking to all of your work and make sure folks follow you. I know you already have a ton of people from our community who love what you guys do, but yeah, just wanted to share some inspiration for the new year for folks thinking about some big projects they can maybe do, or it's a good time of year to just to take a break and reevaluate what you're doing in the studio. And so, yeah, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.